All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's great to have you here. We are doing a live stream today, talking a bit about some of the situations pertaining to YouTube, of course, and a number of clips we want to show. We're going to try to bring in some guests. I've extended some invites. We'll see who can drop by today. I know that Patrick Casey from AIM will be able to drop by here a little bit later, and we'll talk with him about the purge that he went through. But of course, many other James Alsop, V-Dare, Martin Selner, I think TRS had a channel that would let go. There's a number of other ones too. I want to make sure we list all of those later. But there's a lot to say about this, folks, and a lot of huge issues with this that's worth discussing and kind of clamping down on. Do you guys remember when Susan did her little spiel and shtick about the new terms of service and stuff like that? There's a clip on that we actually can show right away, so you can get an idea just how dishonest they are, and also just how weak these terms of services are on YouTube. Just what a shitty platform it really has become. It's a sad thing. But you know, anyway, check out this clip here from Susan.
Welcome Susan Wojcicki, CEO of YouTube. I gave you a good hip-hop theme for your way in.
Thank you.
There was a policy change. I think they all sort of happened at the same time. Can we just walk through if they were connected?
Sure. So first of all, thank you. It's a lot of things happened last week, and it's great to be here and talk about what happened. But I do want to start because I know that the decision that we made was very hurtful to the LGBTQ community, and that was not our intention at all. And
should we just set context for anyone who's not following this, what decision this was?
Yeah, so I'll go into that, but I thought it was really important to be upfront about that and to say that was not our intention, and we were really sorry about that. But I do want to explain why we made the decision that we did. Two different things that happened at the same time. We made a really significant change involving hate speech. This is something we had been working on for months. We have made about 30 changes in the last 12 months. This past week, we made a change in how we handle hate speech. And that took months and months of work and hundreds of people we had working on that hate speech. And that was a very significant launch and a really important one. Make it so that if there's a video that alleges that some race or religion or gender or group, protected group, is superior in some way and uses that to justify discrimination or exclusion, that would now no longer be allowed on our platform. Hate speech. We had actually had limited features, meaning that it wasn't in the recommendations, it wasn't monetized, it had an interstitial in front of it to say that hate speech was content that we found offensive. And when we did that, we actually reduced the views to it by 80%. So we found that it was effective, but we really wanted to take this additional step. And we made this step on Wednesday, hate speech. And then we also added victims of verified violent events.
All right, there you go. So you've seen it, I'm sure, right? YouTube caves to the ADL, removes top right-wing channels with no terms of service violations. As we said, James Alsop, V-Dare were a few of them. The slippery slope of Orwellian censorship continues. I thought we could talk about this article here a little bit too. In compliance with a recent directive from the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, which is really the main organization behind all of this. That's the ones. If there's any enemies in America today, the true enemies of free speech, it's this organization, because it's this organization. There's others, obviously, but the ADL is a very effective machine in terms of lobbying the YouTubes and the Googles, Facebook, Apple, Twitter, all these platforms, to basically do what they want and shut down the criticism and the kind of speech which they do not like. So the blame needs to be directed in the right direction here. It's Jonathan Greenblatt with the ADL that's primarily responsible. It's the underlings to him as well. There's a number of people that have popped up. They were hiring some new people. I guess it's going very well over there. You know, they profit on hate and all this stuff. I remember watching a clip from Defamation, very good documentary. I mentioned it many times, where they kind of tracked and traced the kind of things that they did at the ADL headquarters in New York. And it was some of the most ridiculous things you can ever imagine in terms of what came in and became registered in their little database as hate crimes. It was essentially people who couldn't get the day off at work for some specific Jewish holiday and things like that. And then that was taken down as an anti-Semitic hate crime. And hence you have a massive increase in the number of reported hate crimes because people are more offended and they have less of a thick skin these days, right? So that's why we see this huge spike. It really isn't a massive issue. It's not what they're trying to make it out to be, but they can control the narrative by dictating this in this direction. And of course, we know that this is directed towards people who are opposing the globalization process. They're anti-immigration, they're anti-open door policy. You know, there's a number of things that kind of comes in the wake of this, or they're against, you know, kind of the propaganda that's being pushed on kids when it comes to like the LGBT, you know, agenda and things like this, right? Just an overarching anti-global establishment kind of reactionary dissenting voices out there that's being silenced by the ADLs and stuff like that. But anyway, it goes on to say the ADL has been leading the charge to remove right-wing content from the Google-owned platform as they continue their efforts in lobbying big tech into enacting the Orwellian nightmare. And here was a kind of a partial list, I think, at least for now, from the ADL. So here's actually the original. No, I don't want your email. From ADL. It says, despite YouTube policy update, anti-Semitic white supremacist channels remain. This is the article, the kind of the recent spat that ADL was giving out. This is August 15th here, targeting people like Rick Wiles and you know, many others as well. Many people that we've had on the show. And essentially, in the beginning of the article, they just kind of go through and without really trying to prove that all these people are bad and need to be censored. But then they go on and list like all these channels. Of course, we're mentioned in there, but many others that are targeted: True News, Pastor Anderson, Stephen Anderson, E. Michael Jones, Michael Hoffman, had him on the show too. Very good perspective from him. Brother Nathaniel. Then they go on to talk about other channels here: Alt Woke, Fuentes Channel, American Free Press, American Freedom Party. But none of these little blurbs that they have underneath is actually pointing out like the supposed crime that they have engaged in. We know it's a wrong thing, obviously, but this crime is what is the exact charge, or how do you link it to the claim that's the title of the headline? Well, that's really not done, and they don't feel the need to kind of prove that or try to point that out to you to kind of make that case clear and say, wait a minute, you know, what's going on here? Why are they targeting these specifically? We're simply back in the case talking about that they don't like this content. They don't like it to be there because these channels have been effective. And so this purge has continued. We spoke with the Iconoclast just a few days ago. His channel, together with The Way of the World, was removed, taken down. And it's just a travesty what YouTube has turned into. It's unbelievable. So that's the scenario we're looking at now. YouTube is a dying and, you know, platform that's going under. Although I wouldn't propose that people abandon ship and kind of give up and leave it either at the same time. We have this, obviously have to fight back. There's a number of lawsuits in the works right now. And although I do have my, I don't know, what do we call it? Suspicions about where these will go, or maybe even what kind of environment that YouTube or Google will let back onto their platform if these lawsuits are successful. And we could talk about that a little bit too. But don't know if you're familiar with PragerU, which is, you know, suing Google and YouTube right now. That's ongoing, I think, or starting up here soon, for restricting about 200 PragerU videos. And although there's issues we could talk about when it comes to PragerU, we can also support them in this effort, for hopefully it could lock something up. It could actually enable other creators to get back onto the platform. So I'm a little curious, and supposedly even as bad as it might be, but even Laura Loomer has now won an appeal, and at least will get to face Google, Twitter, and Facebook, and Apple, it seems like, in a DC Circuit Court of Appeals over the issue of censorship. So it's interesting that YouTube is just really kind of doing like pedal to the metal insanity right now when it comes to blocking people. You see more and more people talking about we need, you know, they have this idea of like a YouTube union or whatever, class action lawsuits. There's like a lot of things that are happening right now. And so YouTube just seems to be like, screw this. We're going all in. Like this is we're going to delete all the channels that we don't want to have on our platform, and we're gonna let ADL tell us which those channels are. Essentially, they're working in this partnership with them. But let's take a look at this PragerU. It's pretty good. I'm glad that they're doing it. Frankly, a lot of issues with them and stuff like that, and they really don't stand up for. As far as I know, they don't really stand up for people who are a little bit more on the fringes than they are when it comes to free speech. Maybe they do, but they're not vocal about it anyway. They just kind of stick and do their own thing. But noticeably, and I think it was actually Andrew Torba, pretty good article. Before we look at that clip from PragerU, he had a good point on this article about some of the recent deletions from the YouTube platform, and it's very true. I mean, he said this: some Fox News establishment approved talking heads conservatives get a 12-hour Twitter ban, and you essentially get round-the-clock tweets. You get articles from influencers about free speech. There's interviews on primetime Fox News with Tucker Carlson. Even the president tweets that he's monitoring the situation, and this is, you know, very, very bad or whatever. And then, of course, you get things like you got today and just a few days ago. Several top YouTube channels, when it comes to the dissenters anyway, those who are dissenting this, what's happening, different viewpoints, thought criminals, anti-globalists, etc., right-wingers, with combined viewerships of hundreds of thousands of subscribers, in the millions of views, suddenly they disappear from YouTube, they're gone. You don't get much action from the alt-light and some of these conservatives and right-wingers and stuff like that, you know, the patriot movements. Very few. I'm glad that at least Big League Politics did an article about it. We can go through some of these articles a little bit later too. But let's take a look at that PragerU video and just see what their lawsuit is about. Obviously, I hope that it goes as far as it needs to go. I hope that YouTube is sued into oblivion at this stage. At the very least, there needs to be a massive change on the platform. And the lawyer, the head lawyer over there, Prager, he does put his finger on the issue, which is essentially, is it a publisher, is it a platform? That distinctions need to be made, because now, right now, as I point out in the video, they're getting the benefit of both, and they can't, that's something that cannot continue. So anyway, here's this video here, let's check it out.
The most important lawsuit in America right now, and perhaps the free world, is Prager University versus YouTube. You might consider this a grandiose statement, especially since I'm the lead attorney for PragerU. I assure you, it's not. That's because this case is about the most fundamental freedom Americans have, freedom of speech, as enunciated in the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. All our freedoms, the very concept of freedom, springs from this right. Lose it, and we're no longer free, not as individuals and not as a nation. I'm not willing to accept that. PragerU doesn't accept that. And you shouldn't either. Okay, so how did we get into this situation? A little background. PragerU is what is called a 501c3, a nonprofit educational media company. It's known primarily for its 5-minute videos. In 2016, viewers began to notice that certain PragerU videos were no longer available. YouTube had placed them on its restricted list, which prevents the videos from playing on computers using content filters to screen out violence and pornography. PragerU assumed this was simply a case of bad algorithms, but YouTube said no. Each restricted video had been reviewed by a walking, talking human. The list included such diverse titles as Are the Police Racist? By Heather McDonald, Israel's Legal Founding by Alan Dershowitz, and even a video on the Ten Commandments by Dennis Prager. YouTube deemed each one unsuitable for young people, treating these videos the same as they would, say, for ones containing pornography or excessive violence. Keep in mind, this is PragerU we're talking about, as Main Street as you can get. And that ultimately turns out to be the issue. PragerU's center-right content, many of their videos, by the way, have no political theme at all, offends YouTube's sensibilities. In other words, the videos aren't being restricted to protect young people from inappropriate content. They're being restricted to protect young people from ideas YouTube disagrees with. We didn't want to sue. We tried to reach an accommodation. But when YouTube wouldn't take the offending videos off the restricted list, there are now 100 on that list, we had no other option. YouTube was infringing on our right to free speech. We filed in federal court in late 2017, and thereafter in California state court. Wait a second, you might say. YouTube, which is owned by Google, is a private company. Can't they do anything they want? The answer is yes and no. Yes, if they are a publisher. No, if they are a public forum. So what's the difference? This gets right to the nub of the matter. A publisher chooses the content that resides on its site. The New York Times is a perfect example. You can't write a story and just expect the New York Times to publish it. The Times chooses what appears on its pages or website. And if they publish a story that contains a malicious lie or violates copyright law, they can be sued. PragerU is also a publisher. It decides what material gets placed on its website. Most sites are publishers. In contrast, a public forum, which can be a physical location like the classic town square or a shopping mall, or a virtual location like a website, is a place that must allow individuals and organizations to exercise their free speech rights. YouTube is an example of a public forum. In fact, YouTube describes itself as a public forum. You make a video, YouTube hosts it, and anyone with an internet connection can watch it. Facebook is also a public forum, and so is Twitter. Here's why this is so important. A public forum under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a law co-sponsored by Democrats and Republicans and passed by Congress in 1996, is not subject to liability for content placed on its site. If someone posts a video about how to build a bomb or writes a threatening comment, the public forum website cannot be held legally responsible for that content. That's a good thing. It gives YouTube and other public forums the chance to host a wide variety of material, from nature videos to political diatribes, without fear of being sued. And it worked. And then it didn't. A few years ago, the social media giants, Google, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, started to behave not like public forums, but like publishers. They stopped following Section 230, which specifically requires that these websites promote a true diversity of political discourse, and began to judge content by their own political and social criteria. In other words, the social media giants wanted both ways. They want the protections of a public forum and the editorial control of a publisher. We're fine if they're a publisher, and we're fine if they're a public forum. They just can't be both. If we win our legal action, YouTube will have to return to the way things were when they started. That's freedom. But if we lose, YouTube gets to act as a publisher while pretending to be a public forum. That would mean much less freedom, and then, eventually, no freedom. Because the most powerful internet sites on Earth will determine what you see and what you don't. I'm Eric George, Managing Partner, Brown George Ross, for Prager University.
All right, there you go. So, a pretty good video, and good luck to them. Maybe something will come out of it. We'll just have to see how that develops. But, you know, great. You know, we should be supportive of that, and hopefully, you know, there could be some kind of class action lawsuit or something. But the point is, something has to give. I just don't understand why they're pushing this pedal to the metal kind of just madness when it comes to the censorship right now, specifically when there is no terms of service violation, where they don't even specify like three strikes and you're out. They just like a complete deletion. So they just seem to have like totally lost their head on YouTube. And then like Susan Wojcicki, we'll look at those tweets in a moment. She's just like, oh, now more than ever, it's super important that we let people like, you know, have voiced their opinions on the platform and stuff. And it just goes, you know, completely derailing from there. But anyway, we actually have Patrick Casey with us here from AIM, who, of course, previously was with us here at Red Ice. Great to have you back again and talking to you, Patrick. How's it going for you?
It's great to be back. Thank you for having me, Henrik. I'm doing all right, all things considered. We lost our YouTube channel yesterday.
Yep.
So that, you know, very unfortunate. And, you know, a few weeks ago, I lost my Twitter account as well. So we've been hit fairly hard. But you know, we're gonna keep going just like everyone else. Fortunately, there are alternatives to, you know, these big platforms. But you know, I think as all of the Red Eyes viewers are aware, the big platforms basically are the public forum. And you know, if you're kicked off from these, then your ability to spread the message and to, you know, get the word out is going to be significantly hampered.
Yeah, obviously that's what they're going for. I think also the mass deletion kind of approach is to try to see if they delete one huge channel at one point, you could raise a lot of fuss around that. But some of the maybe, I don't know, lesser, it depends on the popularity, of course, but it might be buried, their deletion, as many other high-profile channels are kind of gone as well, which is, I mean, I know that you guys had, you rebranded recently and stuff, so you had a new channel and everything, so that you weren't up there in the subscriber base yet. So it's important to get the word out that, you know, smaller channels like the one you guys had also were deleted. There's a lot of other people that have suffered along. We had, like, the Iconoclast with us a few days ago, Way of the World, and again, it was the same approach, nothing. In terms of like what happened, like why? Give us an example. How did we violate your terms of service? Was it the same with the AIM channel? Was it like not a strike thing and then out? Was it just gone overnight?
Yeah, it was precisely that. It was just gone overnight. There wasn't any warning. There wasn't, hey, you need to improve this, you need to improve that. YouTube just wants it, you know, same with the other big tech companies. They want it to be ambiguous. They want to, you know, have the sole power to arbitrate what is allowed to go on their platform and what isn't. And if they actually had a very specific list of things that you can and can't do, then people would find ways to, you know, skirt around the rules and so forth, and they would be held to them. Now, these platforms do have terms of service, obviously, but, you know, in the case of YouTube just yanking so many people's channels, it's very obvious that they just did it because they felt like it. Although, you know, the real reason for this, I think, is the fact that the ADL compiled a hit list of YouTube channels that it wanted to see erased. So I, you know, I'm really getting the feeling, to quote Tony Soprano, that came in at the end, you know, that we, all of us basically who have, you know, used the internet, we've seen the golden age of the internet, and now it's coming to a close, right? The era of a free and open, you know, the wild west of the internet, right? It's coming to an end. And I think it was bound to happen given the agenda of our ruling class. It's not, you know, something that needs to last forever. I do support efforts that, you know, various people are undertaking to push back against this, particularly the lawsuits. At the same time, though, I'm not very optimistic about any of the individual lawsuits. I think the lawfare angle is one that's going to have to be pursued for a while until something sticks, but it's definitely commendable that people aren't, you know, people with the means are, you know, suing Twitter, suing YouTube and so forth. And hopefully something good comes of it. But ultimately, I think that we're not going to see change until, you know, the government actually intervenes and does something.
Yeah, it reminds me of Jared Taylor, right, suing Twitter. And all of a sudden, as far as I understood the situation, basically the judge who was initially supportive was replaced by somebody. We don't know what happened there. Just someone comes in and say, no, let's replace this judge. And then all of a sudden, I think he dismissed the case or something. Let me pull up an article here. What actually happened? Jared Taylor can sue Twitter for banning him. Judge rules. That's actually an old one. So let's pull up like this one here. Twitter beats censorship lawsuit by banned white nationalists. This is the updated version of this here. Which is kind of like last year or whatever. So essentially, you know, I don't know if you're as suspicious as I am, but when you get the PragerU's and even to a certain extent the Laura Loomer suing, it's interesting to see that they might be succeeding more in court than other people have, and that what we might see is a fallback where some individuals are let back onto the platform where they can still kind of enjoy the freedom of being in the new digital public space, while others who are, you know, obviously smeared with the same lies as these individuals are overall in the mainstream media, but they're still those real bad guys, they can't get back on the platform. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's conceivable that some of the bigger names in the alt-light will, you know, be allowed back onto the platform. And then the, you know, the true dissidents, no offense to them, but those of us who are really voicing dissident opinions Will remained cast off, you know, in the shadows and so forth. It remains to be seen. I haven't seen too much willingness on behalf of these platforms to let people back on. Every now and then there's an occasional successful appeal for these channels and so forth. I remember for Identity Europa, our small YouTube channel was deleted or temporarily suspended. It's card to key, you know, all of these.
When was that, by the way?
This was sometime in 2018, I'm pretty sure, like late 2018.
Right.
And we appealed it and they let us use their platform again, which was good. But generally speaking, once you've been like, once the appeals have failed and once you've been, kicked off of the platform, it's pretty rare to see them allow you back. Maybe one of these lawsuits will work and a court will rule that Laura Loomer has to be allowed back on Twitter or something. I wish her the best. I wish Alex Jones the best.
I do too, of course, exactly.
Best, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
But again, I'm a short-term pessimist, long-term optimist. I don't think that this is going to last forever, but it's probably going to get a lot worse before things improve.
But this is my thing. I mean, what the hell are they thinking? I mean, do they really think that this is the way that they're going to... I mean, I'm not sure that they're even thinking this far and thinking, well, you know, let's just delete these people and we'll win or something or whatever it is, right? But that this is somehow in the, as you say, in the long term, that's going to be a winning strategy, which is obviously isn't. A lot of people are paying attention. A lot of people are seeing this. A lot of people are angry. They're upset. They see the just complete, call it a double standard, but just a complete out of control resentment and hatred for free speech. And again, I mean, this is like America's tradition of free speech has been one of the primary ones. I mean, it's like there's a reason why it's the first freaking amendment. You know, if you don't have the ability to speak and voice your concerns, your what you see as issues, your political opinions, try to influence people and stuff, you really don't have much left, to be honest. It kind of stops right there. So I'm very curious about this tactic and this approach to it, where they're like just mass delete in this way as there's lawsuits actually ongoing now for these very issues. That can't bode very well. All of this is evidence that can literally be used against them. And then they have that kind of dual benefit going on right now, where they do have the Sections 230 protection under the Decency Communications Act. And then they're at the same time kind of operating as a publisher where they say, no, you can't speak because why? Well, because we don't like you and we're going to remove your channel. So something has to give. It's not going to work forever, I think.
No, it's not. With regard to the distinction between being a platform and a publisher, I think that's a really good route to pursue. But as to the point you raised regarding... I think you kind of raised the question, will this last, right? They're getting a lot of, this is pissing people off, obviously, and understandably so. I'm one of them. You're one of them as well. Yeah. But when it comes to, the pressure, I think that these social media companies are in somewhat of an unenviable position. I'm not going to try to convince the viewers to sympathize too much or at all, frankly, with the people running these companies. But so they have pressure from below in the form of the users, right? The rabble that includes us. We're mad that our channels are getting pulled and that they're eroding, the American tradition of free speech and so forth. But they're getting a lot of pressure from above as well, from the ADL, from behind the scenes. And it's the same thing with payment processors, right? They get pressured by, in some cases, the government, in many cases, Visa and MasterCard and so forth. So it just goes to show that, the powers that be, the cathedral has more power and influence than us. And I don't think anyone doubts that. At the end of the day, it's the people with the most power, influence, and money who are largely going to get what they want. It's not really a numbers game, right? So even though there are more of us who are mad about this, you've got a few people sitting around in the ADL at headquarters who are able to wield, immense influence over these social media companies.
Yeah.
So it's really just a function of power relations, who has the power, who doesn't. And, ultimately all of the issues that we face, all of the issues that we individually draw attention to, such as mass immigration, anti-white policies, and of course, tech censorship and deplatforming. All of these are the symptoms of bad governance. We have the wrong people occupying the highest positions of power, not just in the government, but in academia, in the media, finance, banking, and so forth. So as long as the globalists are, you know, where they are, as long as they're in the driver's seat, then, you know, we're going to be, we're going to be fighting an uphill battle. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely in the short term, I think as well. We'll just have to see kind of how much each, both creator or organization, media outlet, whatever, which organize, you know, group or whatever, how much they do actually suffer from that. There's already been, of course, kind of a restriction because of, as you say, the pressure has been so hard on the YouTubes, and many other platforms as well, to choke out people that have these views, that they're unapproved, unauthorized by the establishment, essentially. So they've put in various measures in place, which includes algorithm restrictions. You red flag certain creators and outlets and channels. They shadow ban, they block, they, you know, they do certain things. A lot of people have already seen a massive drop, us included, in like traffic and views that we get every, you know, month and stuff like that. But it seems that it's still not good enough, right? They don't know when to stop. They don't know how to put some kind of restraint on themselves and say, okay, let's back off a little bit, see how this goes. It's just, as I said before, total just pedal to the metal insanity, driving the whole organization into a wall. I looked at the tweet that Susan did, and we could show these too, but, you know, you sent me this too. Vox had this YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki say it's more important than ever to let people upload anything they want. That means the video platform is okay with content that is outside the mainstream, controversial, or even offensive. And she went on to tweet a follow-up to this too. I think this was after. Preserving YouTube as an open platform is more important than ever. My latest letter to creators is all about how YouTube balances openness with responsibility to protect the community. And I mean, she was just getting hammered in the responses to this too. I haven't seen the ratio on this yet, but, you know, a lot of people paying attention. The angry people, Patrick, are definitely paying attention to this. What do you make of it? Why the lie? Why these just outrageous, just like lies about what they're doing?
Yeah, so it's the classic strategy of saying one thing and doing another. You know, as they restrict the use of their platform, as they make it more exclusive, you know, they tell you how open it is and how much they value it. I mean, yeah, the tone of Wojcicki's article is basically she's saying like, oh, I know it's controversial, but I actually think that we should be very open about this, as if her openness is kind of a controversial opinion, right? You know, she's going against the grain by saying, oh, I think that we should be open about this. Well, I mean, it's very Orwellian, right? This comes the day after they do this massive purge. I mean, James Alsop had 500,000 subscribers. How many people on YouTube have more than that? That many in terms of, I mean, there are a lot of people on there, but in terms of the percentage of the overall, you know, amount of channels, it's got to be, you know, less than 1%, a fraction of a percent, but yeah, it's they're pretending like they care about being open. They think that, oh yeah, controversial content. What's controversial that's you know, not that hasn't, you know, attracted the you know, attention of the ire of Sauron at this point?
Yeah, and who's the judge of this too, right? I mean, they're just setting whatever standards they want. Again, that implies that they're a publisher and saying we're setting the rules. It's not up to anybody to do whatever they want on the platform. So okay, well then you're a publisher. Then you're in that territory. But again, have you noticed that there's, and you know this very well, of course, due to the fact of the activism and so forth that you do, that you can just have, I don't know, X amount of journalists levy an accusation against somebody, and that just becomes the established fact, essentially, in the reality we live in. And then it's like there's no recourse, you can't respond, there's no, you know, where's the judge and the jury, you know, where's this conviction about these things that they say? And some of it might be true, but other cases it's not. It's like exaggerations, it's misconstrued quotations, it's just complete out of context things that they take, and they weave this picture, this like ghost, this monster image of what someone is or what an organization is. And then that seems to just stand in the mainstream media. It stands on, you know, in relation to why YouTube should remove or delete somebody. But my point is, there's no recourse, and these people have just put themselves in as the judges in their ivory towers. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, the court of public opinion, and in the age of mass media and social media, the court of public opinion is stronger than ever. The ramifications thereof are more damning than ever. Yeah, there's not much you can really do. I mean, well, you know, I don't want to be too fatalistic there and too defeatist, but yeah, it's you can, you know, fortunately we have channels like yours that are quite big, and you know, we still are on some platforms, some of us, and we, you know, have the ability to get the word out that way. But that's all we really can do in terms of pushing back against their narrative, right? It's you know, it's very hard. It's along the lines of the, you know, the saying that no one reads the retraction too. Because even if they say something really absurd about you and then they issue a small retraction later, the damage has largely already been done by that point. And I mean, we are, you know, as technology develops, new technologies always have unforeseen consequences and ramifications. And I think we're absolutely living that out right now, right? We are the victims, of that process. Maybe there were some people who predicted that we would end up here 20, 30 years ago, but the amount of power that social media companies have at this point is really unparalleled in the past in terms of the ability to shut people out of the conversation, right? The conversation, as the left is want to say, the ability of the mainstream media just to, you know, totally assassinate someone's character. You know, ruin their livelihood and so forth. We see that happen to dissidents all the time, regardless of whether or not they're violent, well-intentioned, respectable people. It doesn't matter.
As long as,
you know, they have the wrong opinion, they're equally guilty. But again, short-term pessimist, long-term optimist. I think that there is a growing wave of discontent that is being directed toward big tech and so forth. But it's interesting to note how the establishment is responding to that, right? I mean, the tech censorship should be a bipartisan issue. It should be one that people on both sides of the aisle understand is a bad thing. Because at the end of the day, these tech overlords, they might pay lip service to these ideas or those, but the people behind the curtain, the people who are making the decisions at the end of the day are cynical. They're only interested in power. They're only interested in money. And if allowed to, if they're allowed to run wild and enact their plans, things are going to be far worse for everyone involved. But unfortunately, what they're doing now, and it seems to be succeeding at least for a time, is convincing people that opposing tech censorship is part of the general right-wing pathology. If you are against tech censorship, if you're against Mark Zuckerberg, you know, these companies that within other contexts, liberals will love to complain about what they're doing with their data, and they're absolutely right to complain about that. They'll convince these liberals that actually, you know, it's a good thing to be censoring these people with the bad opinions and so forth. But I mean, at the end of the day, anyone who's supporting tech censorship, supporting, you know, giving tech companies even more power, they're just really paving the way for an increased, and I'm hesitant to say policed state, but a surveillance state, absolutely. Tech dystopia. That is the future that we're facing. And, you know, AIM, we actually did an action about 2 weeks ago in Dallas. And we went to a large building in downtown Dallas. And from a car, we projected a really large projection of a movie, like a looping video clip that said end tech censorship. And, you know, we did a little demonstration. I gave a speech as well. We had about 15 people out there, and there were a bunch of bars on the other side of the street, and people came out of the bars to talk to us. And I think it's the kind of situation where people who support these things are, you know, heavily incentivized to stay quiet. Otherwise they'll, you know, out themselves as someone who has the wrong opinions. But, you know, we had people that just came up and were yelling at us, calling us Nazis and so forth over a demonstration for tech censorship. They started rambling about how, you know, immigrants are being killed because of their skin color. So it's just a way, you know, the establishment is successfully, you know, turning the masses against, you know, having basically an open and a free internet. They're turning people pro censorship, right? They're saying,
yeah,
oh, well, we're not going to censor you. We'll just censor the bad people. Well, you know, at the end of the day, these people on the left are going to quickly realize that, you know, if they have dissenting opinions on economics or foreign policy from, you know, the establishment, that they will realize that after us, they're going to lose their ability to dissent as well.
Of course, but they don't care about that because they have so much hate. They're more interested in just ruining whatever they can. And again, it's very true what you say. I mean, it's just like, the main kind of issues that are being spun right now in mainstream media is just unbelievable to watch. It's it's definitely on a level of hysteria, which I've never seen before. I think it's kind of the approach going into 2020 as well. I do believe that that's part of it. You know, we've played many times the clip where, like, you know, Twitter and Facebook, YouTube, Google, etc., Apple, we're almost charged with being the ones responsible for why it went so wrong with Trump getting into office, right? So they're setting up all these like extra units and people and monitors and, you know, new kind of things to try to prevent that from happening. We played those clips many times on the show where they openly sitting in media talking about, well, we're going to try to prevent 2016 from happening again. And now going into 2020, we're going to do X, Y, Z to prevent those kinds of things. And we're like, what does that mean? Well, it means limit people's ability to be supportive of the candidate that they want to be supportive of. So right now, Google is in the hot seat in terms of the election, the potentiality of election meddling, right? Do they have the right to kind of get involved in these kinds of questions and stuff like that? Which they don't, of course, because, again, they get like massive amounts of subsidies and stuff. But it's a huge issue. And again, that issue of like the hysteria that's spun right now in the media is almost like, well, Trump is a white nationalist and they're all terrorists because now they're out killing people. So we can, it's this by any means necessary kind of tactic here. As you say, they think people are like being killed every day by these bad people. And so therefore we can do and need to do actually, in fact, everything we need to do to stop them kind of thing. And that's leading, I think, to hysteria and a paranoia and a polarization, which even outperforms what we saw in 2016. We're closer to the Weimar kind of days than to anything else I've seen. Takes on that?
Yeah, I mean, we truly live in strange and unfortunate times. It's going to be interesting to see how things go. It's going to be interesting to see the extent to which they really clamp down. I think in general, the ruling class, the globalists, whatever you want to call them, they generally would rather do things gradually, right? They'd rather, you know, there are going to be moments where large changes happen, but it's, you know, the proverbial slow boil, right? If you can spread out these changes over generations, then people are going to be, you know, new generations are going to be, you know, more susceptible to your message because they've been raised in it, right? But I think we are at a point now where the left and the establishment in general feels threatened. Just the establishment feels threatened. It absolutely does. 2016 was not supposed to happen. Unfortunately, Donald Trump has largely, you know, sided with the establishment in many ways, not in every way, but
right.
Nevertheless, they don't want that to happen again. They don't want Trump in office. So yeah, they have been, again, with kind of the top-down pressure that we discussed earlier, you know, you have the ADL, you have the media, you have, you know, maybe even the Democratic candidates and politicians and so forth, applying quite a bit of pressure to these social media companies, either indirectly or directly blaming them for the success of Donald Trump, right? Kind of buying into the cope narrative that, you know, these Russian troll farms, which did exist, won Trump the election, which is not true. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do things ahead of 2020, right? We have a number of, you know, big content creators who were kicked off in one day. And there's still, you know, what, like over a year until the next election.
There's more to come. Just watch the next, I think, couple of weeks. There's going to be essentially everyone on the list on the ADL are probably going to be picked off, I think.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they go for the whole list at once. Although, actually, I wouldn't really be surprised. But if I had to bet money on it, I think that they're going to spread it out quite a bit. Because one thing I've noticed that there are always these scares of, oh, YouTube's updating its policy, Twitter's updating this policy, and everyone's like, all right, we're going to get kicked off today. And one of those days might come, but I think it's just going to be a gradual thing. There's less outrage when they do it that way. And, you know, it's easier for them to work incrementally. But yeah, I think by 2020, I would be surprised if, you know, many of us are still on these big platforms.
Yeah. Trump will do nothing, I think.
We have these alternative platforms. Telegram is one that I've really taken a liking to recently. DLive is good. Gab is good too. It has some issues, but it's certainly better than nothing. You know, and there are many others as well. I think the main thing that we need to do is we need to encourage our viewers and our followers and so forth, people in the movement, to get more active on these, right? We're spreading the message on Telegram, on DLive, on all of these different platforms, but the issue is there aren't as many people on these platforms. So we need to get more people on there. You guys can keep your Twitter accounts, you can keep your Facebook accounts, whatever, just install Telegram, keep up with what Red Ice is posting, keep up with what American Identity Movement is posting, keep up with what I'm personally posting. And you know, that's a good way that we can kind of offset the damage done by these waves of censorship is, you know, as long as people are able to keep their followings and continue to grow their followings, then we'll still be able to get the message out. We'll still be able to keep in touch with the people who matter. You know, there are some issues with, I think one of the main benefits of being on a platform like Twitter or YouTube is that there are just millions and millions, maybe even billions in the case of YouTube, of people on the platform who don't share your views, right? So those are people who could potentially be won over. So if you're on Telegram, it's going to be a little harder to do that, but, you know, you can still forward someone else's stuff. There've been, you know, a number of people who have been forwarding mine, Faith, Nick, even Milo, which was interesting, who have been, you know, helping me promote my channel and so forth, which has been good. But, yeah, I would just encourage, you know, people who support Red Ice, people who support me, support the dissident right in general, you know, make sure you're staying up to date on, you know, a few of these dissident platforms as well, so that, you know, if and when we all finally get purged, that doesn't lead to, you know, everything kind of falling apart. We need to keep the momentum going. We need to keep getting, you know, spreading the word. We need to keep, at the very least, being able to communicate amongst each other. So
yeah, no, that's a good point. And, you know, there is the issue, though, like, you know, BitChute and Gab and stuff, and I'm really glad that they are there. But just as you say, Patrick, it kind of, it's easy that they just kind of turn into ghettos of disappointed people who were kicked off kind of the main platforms. And that's why, at the same time, we can't give up. We can't just say, ah, you know what, screw that. I'm going to give up on YouTube and leave. I don't get me wrong. I understand why people do it. I understand that some people are like, you know what, I'm not going to keep up with this. I just don't have the energy for it. It's too, in a way, it's kind of too nerve-wracking. You can spend, I don't know, the hell did we start our channel? I think we were on there by 2010, 2009 maybe, or something like that. And then, you know, the first few years, we weren't like, you know, super dedicated on just the YouTube. We were primarily just doing it on, you know, the websites, actually. People are more accustomed going to the website. And then over the years, you know, put in more work and you drive more people, you get more subscribers. And the point is, too, Patrick, that you put all those years into it, and then without any reason, without any recourse, without any, you know, we've essentially also helped to make money for them with like Super Chat. We never personally did ads, but many other people, most other creators have done ads. They've created, generated revenue for YouTube, for Google. And then, you know, it's gone overnight, and it's massive impacting those people that have set up those things as a business. It might have taken them 2-3 years to like slowly weave in the production of what they're doing with maybe another job where they end their hours a little bit more, put more hours into their video creation. Eventually you get the wheels turning and you're like, you realize, ah, fuck, this is awesome. I can do this full time. I can, you know, that way I can generate more content, can get the word out, all these things. There's so many pluses with it. And then just overnight, they've literally destroyed your business. You know, again, when we're kicked off, I have no idea what the limitations are going to be at that stage. You know, and if you look at that, let me just show that real quick too. If you look at like what YouTube has on their about section, it's all this like nonsense in terms of like what we're seeing now happening, showing that these values that they have.
They're all about freedom.
Lip service, you know, it's nothing. Yeah, freedom of expression, freedom of information, freedom of opportunity. Look at this one. We believe everyone should have a chance to be discovered, build a business and succeed on their own terms. And the people, not gatekeepers, decide what's popular. You know, it's just like,
let me comment on that real quick. People have decided what's popular. You know what they think's popular? Red Ice TV, James Alsup, Nick Fuentes. And I mean, that's just on YouTube. Obviously, others have done a good job of building up platforms elsewhere. But, you know, they can't handle that, right? They're upset with the fact that there is a massive audience for, you know, dissident and identitarian content. And yeah, it is absolutely despicable that they can just erase, you know, years, in your case, a decade of hard work just overnight. And I remember when I first started working for you guys, this was, must have been early summer of 2016, I believe. That was right around the time that Red Ice TV was launched. And I remember you guys had under 100,000, maybe 50,000.
Yeah, was it? I can't remember what that was.
Yeah, it was definitely under 100. It was probably between 50 and 75. And I think you guys had, you know, maybe done a few videos, but it was mostly uploading the podcast, which, you know, still a wise move. But I mean, just in a few years, you've gone up to what are you at now?
330,000 almost.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's massive. Again, that's got to be in the upper echelon of YouTube. And that's something that you've worked quite hard for.
Yeah.
You know, you're not, not to disparage people who are making, you know, makeup videos and whatever else, but you're, you know, doing something that's controversial, something that requires quite a bit of research and intelligence. And yeah, for them to just cut you off overnight, say goodbye, we've decided that, you know, we're going to just, you know, put a huge dent in your livelihood because you say the wrong thing, and then come out and say, oh, we're all about freedom of expression, freedom of opportunity. It's, you know, it's disgusting. And I'm surprised that they have the, you know, they have no shame, frankly.
They have no shame. It's just total doublespeak. We believe people should be able to speak freely, share opinions, foster open dialogue, and that creative freedom leads to new voices, formats, and possibilities. Under freedom of information, they have, we believe everyone should have easy, open access to information, and that video is a powerful force for education, building understanding, and documenting world events, big and small. And so again, a lot of the creators we're talking about, this is literally what they're doing. They're monitoring world events. They're talking about news, things that happen. They have their say. They put their thing in there. And sometimes it's jokes. Sometimes it's slightly edgy. Sometimes there are some things which, you know, they might not approve of or whatever. But regardless, it's there. There's never a pinpointing of the violations themselves. Talk to us about what it is in the video that you did find so reprehensible. What did we do, right? You're just left guessing and you don't even know. But the issue with the business thing is kind of interesting too, because I think that could potentially be something that's part of the class action lawsuit against Google, Alphabet, I guess, at the end of it, YouTube, because of the fact that they have limited people's ability to... It actually is hurting their income. It's hurt the business, their ability to make money, because they've made bad choices on the YouTube decisions to shut it down. So that's, I think people should actually pressure on that issue. I do believe if you do go after a defamation lawsuit, I think that's a big part of it. If you've lost an income, I think, right? So that could be actually a very interesting thing. So we have to see what happens with a lot of people. But, you know, I've seen so many creators talk about this too, after all the shadow banning and kind of the changing of algorithm and stuff, that it's like they're much more limited now. They have hard time breaking, you know, 5% of the subscriber base that they have on their channels, you know?
Yeah, it's rough. It absolutely is. And I mean, it really does disincentivize people from, you know, starting their own channels, right? If someone, you know, maybe someone who's like 18 now wants to be the next Red Ice or something, he's probably not going to, he's going to have a hard time getting started. And it's going to be, you know, the kind of undertaking that's just incredibly fraught with uncertainty, right? When you got started doing Red Ice, oh, what was that, 10, 15 years ago? Yeah, it was, you know, I don't think you had to worry about this stuff much, if at all, right?
No, obviously it's a completely different time.
Sure, but, yeah.
That's over now. It's a different age, just as you said.
Yeah, we're living in the first, you know, few decades of the internet were truly the Wild West, perhaps best and worst exemplified in, you know, 4chan, but it's really coming to an end. But we just, you know, there are people, more and more people talking about tech censorship at this point. There's been legislation drafted and proposed. I would really like Donald Trump to do a little bit more than monitor the situation. I think we're,
obviously,
you know, the first stage in anything is monitoring, and then you have observing, and then paying attention to, and whatever else. But I would like to get to the doing stage. I would like to get to the point where, now the things are happening, required to rectify the situation. But I'm afraid with the Donald, we're going to remain in a watching and observing stage indefinitely. So
yep.
I think 2024, not to get too caught up in politics, but 2024 is really going to be a make or break moment for us. I think that's going to determine how long, you know, these dark ages are going to last for us, right? Because as we all know, with demographic changes and so forth, you know, there's the Democrats are going to, the party of anti-whiteness basically is going to have open borders, you know, child transgenderism. That's what they're all about at this point. they're going to have, you know, a demographic majority as a result of the racial gerrymandering that's been going on for decades. So, I mean, 2024 is really just starting to see kind of like the make or break moment for America. And, you know, there's the possibility that someone who gets it comes along and does what Trump did. But once he gets into office, he doesn't, you know, fill it with the swamp. He doesn't invite Reince Priebus and Gary Cohn and all of these other, you know, establishment clowns in to staff his administration with, you know, other establishment clowns, basically. But we'll see. You know, in the dissident right, we have to keep sounding the alarm. We have to keep raising awareness about the issues, waking people up, and, you know, building networks with people who do get it and are willing to, you know, take the risk to get involved, maybe even become activists and so forth. But, you know, what we do has to be it's going to be somewhat tied to, you know, the broader, you know, world spirit, so to speak, the development of history, you know, what we are kind of along for the ride. But at the same time, we have to be laying the groundwork for change that is going to be independent of who wins or whether or not there's even a political, you know, like kind of a national electoral political solution to all of this.
Yeah, that's a good question. I have no idea what's going to happen. 2020 is going to be, it's going to be interesting. I mean, again, Trump is not—he's not much of a hope at this point. It wasn't one time, and candidate Trump was certainly very different than President Trump. So we'll have to see where this goes. But yeah, it's as we said, Kenneth Patrick. Short term, not encouraging. People should not give up though. Set up another channel, do it again, continue to push it out there. Don't give up. We have to keep fighting. And again, in the long term, that will just expose their just complete garbage, you know, kind of approaches that they have to their own platforms, how little regard they really have for their creators and stuff like that. So essentially, we're looking at a screenshot right here now of the channels that were mentioned by ADL most recently. True News, I believe those are still there. I just kind of discovered their channel. They do some really good stuff. They're very hard, of course, on Zionism and things like this, which is one of the reasons why they're top of the list. And they use an image on the ADL site as well of Rick Wiles at the very top here. They really don't like Rick Wiles. So that I understand. I do believe they're still there, but we'll see. We'll see how long. And then it was, let me see if I can find the other list here. Yeah, Pastor Anderson, E. Michael Jones, Michael Hoffman, Brother Nathaniel, 122322, Alt Woke, Fuentes, American Free Press, American Freedom Party, AIM, Patrick's channel here. We're talking about American Renaissance, Arctos, Christiogenia, Faith Goldie's channel, The Foundry, James Alsop, and that's gone, of course, now. Ken Daly, Little Revolution 2, NPI Radix, Pastor Eli James, The Political Cesspool, JF's channel, The Public Space, TRS Radio, I believe that's gone as well since yesterday. Reclaim America, The Red Elephants, I think Vince is still there. Us, we received a strike today, of course, we cannot live stream. We cannot upload for about a week, so we'll see how we, if we're still there by that time. So do make sure you just subscribe to all the other channels that we do have, folks, and all the other ways. And finally, two other ones, The Occidental Quarterly, Kevin McDonald's, again, I do believe that's still there, and then VDAR TV and VDAR Radio was sacked yesterday as well. So yeah, Patrick, I think those lists are going to continue to increase. We're going to get more names and more. And you know, we called it, right? When Alex Jones was booted off, we saw this unprecedented cooperation among social media platforms, kicking him off of, was it like 14 totally or something, different social media sites in one day or a couple of days, 48-hour period. And, you know, everyone called it. It was like, okay, well, he's just a canary in the coal mine in terms of like being on YouTube and these platforms. And now they've just really opened the valve to the mass deletion campaigns. So I don't know if you have anything else kind of to add to that. I do want to make sure that you plug your stuff so people know where to go if they want to follow AIM or follow your channels, your profile, and the different social media you have at the very least. But yeah, any final comments about all this?
I think that people need to maintain faith and don't let this get you down. If you're really in this and you really do care about the future of our people and our civilization, you've got to resign yourself to the fact that there are going to be obstacles and that things aren't going to go the way that we want. And you have to put things in perspective too, right? This is bad. Getting kicked off of a website is absolutely bad if it's one as big and as important as YouTube or Twitter. However, our ancestors faced and endured far worse, right? Famine, warfare, mass pillaging of their civilizations by Turks and, you know, Moors and so forth. So, and they kept going. So we have to keep going too. Don't lose faith. Don't lose heart. And just make sure that you're either getting involved, you're either joining AIM, doing activism, networking, creating content, or you're supporting people who are putting their necks out there. There are many great people to support. Doesn't have to be me. Doesn't have to be American Identity Movement. It could be Red Ice, could be VDair, Amren, and so forth. But yeah, in terms of where to follow me, so basically, you can follow me on Telegram. It's t.me/PatrickCaseyUSA. You can also go to twitter.com/AIM_America. That's the official AIM Twitter. And we have one of our more recent tweets contains the links to all our various social media platforms off of Twitter, right? So we're on a number of them. I would again encourage people to get more active on Telegram, get more active on DLive, on some of these other platforms, at least have an account, check in from time to time. I'd say Telegram is really the main alt platform to keep track of at this point. We have a lot of people, who are creating content there, and it's good stuff. So please be sure to help out, your favorite content creator, and, just keep at it. We're going to win this eventually, but it's going to take a lot of time, and we have to be willing and able to take hits and bounce back.
Yeah, they've won a couple of battles, but not the war. It continues.
Right, there's a massive power imbalance, but we have the truth on our side, and the fact that they're doing all of this shows that they're scared. Right, there's still a lot of rising energy and populism for immigration restriction. A lot of growing discontent with the ruling class on both the right and the left. I don't think either will really form together too much at any point, unfortunately. But I do think that we're going to see great changes in our lifetime for the good, for the better. But until then, we just have to keep at it, and we have to resign ourselves to the fact that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, keep fighting. But again, that's a good point, and we could kind of end with you, Patrick, on that, unless you have anything else. But it shows that they are terrified of the people that are there and doing this work. They might kind of maybe not underestimate, but they might not kind of think that these individuals will have something to muster up when it comes to lawsuits or whatever against YouTube or Google or Alphabet. But at the same time, they do such blatant kind of transgressions against their own kind of policies and things like this. And frankly, putting a lot of risk into removing people, which, again, as you say, if it wasn't any issue, if these people were not popular, if we weren't reaching people, if it didn't make sense what we said, if we were just a bunch of kooks or like crazy and just a bunch of haters or something, then what's the big deal? Just let them speak, because it's like, is that going to impair the platform or something, right? It shows that the establishment has their crosshairs on like a lot of individuals because they don't like it. We might think of it as it's small at this point. It's not that big, or there's much more work to do. We're just kind of getting the wheels turning, but it shows that they want to put this, they want to stop this thing in its tracks and say that, let's shut it down now and make sure that it doesn't continue, because if it does, something, it's going to grow into something larger. So they do fear it on some level. That has to be recognized. If they didn't think that there was something to it, they would just let it go and say like, well, whatever, we can just bury them in misinformation and fake news about what's going on, and that'll be that. They cannot have voices that are out there accurately pinpointing what it is that's happening, the negative downsides to the type of policies that our leaders are enforcing outside of the realm of asking the people if they really want it. We don't have democratic decision making in terms of like, do you guys want to open the borders? We don't have those very fundamental basic policies, I guess, in place, where our politicians, and this is true all over the West, not only America, where they bypass the people and they do a policy which is, it needs to be pointed out, radically transforming our countries in a way that we never have seen historically before. It's the biggest question of our age right now that's happening, and they're expecting us just to sit down and shut up and obey and roll over and do whatever the hell they want. And again, regardless of whether you or me are here, whether Red Ice and AIM are there or all these other people, that's not going to go away, that level of criticism. Those people seeing that, those people noticing what it is that's happening, I think is just going to grow, irrespective of their ability to censor people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have the truth on our side, and this social order is rightfully deemed Orwellian because it is reliant, it is dependent upon the suppression of the truth. It is dependent upon the promulgation of falsehoods. So that's, yeah, they're scared. They have to keep a lid on things. But, you know, the cat's out of the bag. What happened in 2016, I think, will really be seen, you know, in the future when we look back on all this as kind of the beginning of what was to come. So, yeah, people watching this, don't succumb to the black pill, right? You should be improving yourself and finding a way to contribute to the movement. We all have a part to play. But yeah, thank you, Henrik, for having me on. Best of luck with Red Ice, and I look forward to talking to you again at some point.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. I really, really appreciate it. Good luck with AIM and everything you guys are doing. It's great to have you guys there. So we'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. Appreciate it. All right, guys, there we go. Off the record with Patrick there, or we'll wrap up there, rather. We did an extended invite to, I don't know, I don't think James Salza got the message. I messaged him on Gab. I don't think he's been active since last night or something like that too. We extended an invite to him. Peter Brimlow, I did get a hold of him through email. Vidar, of course, is the editor, and I couldn't, he was unavailable as well, so we'll see if we can get him later in the week. And I even extended through Ethan Ralph from the Killstream an invitation to Medicare. Again, I don't know how to get a hold of the guy, so you know, some of the people that were impacted by this, Medicare, by the way, got I think two strikes. And I don't know if it was yesterday or two days ago, but that was pretty interesting as well. They're going for like really kind of high profile accounts, like people that have a lot of followers, a lot of subscribers. And so, you know, that's very interesting. I don't know what you guys are doing in the chat. Like you're gay. Like you're not gonna get away from that. It's just embarrassing. DLive is a lot of glow in the dark feds in there tonight. So anyway, we appreciate your effort. Figs, it's not going to work. But anyway, guys, I think we're going to wrap up for now. There's a lot of things, of course, to discuss and break down about this, but we'll leave it at that for now. We're going to continue. We're going to monitor this, just as Trump. No, but do make sure, in all seriousness, do make sure that you follow us on the various different accounts and stuff like that, because it is important. It's important that we are able to reach you guys. And of course, we can't do this without you. That's just the reality of it, right? That's just how things go. We are on a number of different platforms. And of course, one thing that's good is we've never been dependent on, you know, the YouTubes. We have our own platform, Red Ice Media, redicemembers.com, rather. Red Ice Media is the second YouTube channel. They have the backup. Subscribe to that. But redicemembers.com, our members website, we host everything ourselves there. We have all the files there. We have HD versions of the shows. You can download MP3 versions. We have all the radio shows, podcasts going back to 2006. Again, so we have a platform. Everything is there. We can do whatever we want there, essentially, in terms of censorship and all that kind of stuff. So make sure that you get a membership if you want to help us out and support us. Make sure that we can continue, because again, if we, or rather maybe when, unfortunately, when we lose the YouTube channel, who knows what's going to happen at that point? So it's important we have you guys out there supporting people. If there's anything you can do, if you're not out there being outspoken and speaking about the kind of things that concerns us and the kind of things that we talk about, if you can't be in the limelight, the base minimum that you need to do is to support the various creators. Pick, I don't know, 2, 3, whatever you can do of your favorite ones, and help those out in this time as well, because people are already suffering because of the demonetization. People are suffering because they're being choked out, and if obviously now people are suffering because they can't even have a channel on YouTube. They get censored on Twitter and stuff like that. So anyway, here's some of our backups in case you guys don't know what's going on. Telegram, t.me/redicetv, BitChute, make sure that you follow us on our BitChute, bitchute.com/redicetv. We're going to start uploading more exclusive content there as well. And kind of not face off from YouTube again. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to be there. It's important to kind of, I think, be a thorn in their side as well, and not give up that easy, and not walk away from it. So essentially, you know, we can begin to do some exclusive stuff just on BitChute, And then we can do, you know, some other stuff on other, you know, channels. Essentially, DLive is good as well for live streaming, for now at least. We'll see what happens. If you're watching it over here, thank you. It's good to have a growing, you know, amount of people on the DLive side as well. So we do appreciate that. With all the lemons and all the ice creams and ninja guineas and jets or whatever the hell they're doing over there. So anyway, Instagram, we are on Instagram as well, Red Ice Media. Check it out. Mine's Gab. We have accounts there. The backup to the YouTube, as I said, is Red Ice Media as well. So make sure that you follow us there. All right, Figs. Great talking to you. Thank you for tuning in, stopping by. We'll see if we can get a hold of Brimlow, as I said, for a little quick maybe comment or something at least throughout the week. Not sure if Medicar would be interested at all in getting on with us here, but he's welcome to join as well. And obviously, Alsip. If you're hearing this, we'd love to get you on and kind of just talk a little bit about the situation. Help to plug your stuff as well, see where this is going, and see what your plans are in terms of moving forward and where you're going to create more stuff and things like that. So I think that that's important. But guys, let me open the DLive chest here before we wrap up as well. And that way, we'll distribute some of the shekels. Let me see. Let me go in here. There's the... I thought I added in some more in the chest. Maybe I didn't. Anyway... I thought I did. That's interesting. Okay. Actually, I thought I did. Let me open it up here. Sorry, guys. So we can distribute that. It's not much, but let's distribute that. But yeah, so that's it. Thank you, chat. I really appreciate it. We'll be back with much more here soon. Lana did an interview today with the lady in, I forget, it was Indiana that had been essentially harassed by Antifa. Just out of control clown world silliness in terms of Antifa and left-wing activists in this little town targeting a family of farmers, organic farmers. They're going to farmers markets and harassing them and stuff like that for supposed, you know, they're fascists, of course. So you can just, you know, just call them whatever. Just call them racist and Nazi and fascist. And that opens you up to be able to do anything you want with them, essentially. That's the story there. So anyway, a really good interview with that's coming up. I think we'll get that up on the site tomorrow. So make sure that you follow us of course, at redice.tv and redicemembers.com. Not going to be too long-winded, guys. Thank you again. We'll wrap up right there. Have a great evening wherever you are. Take care. We'll see you guys soon. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.